guys, Club Brothers here. This is View from the Cheap Seats. We have a great show this week. We have a fantastic guest, someone who, for some reason, we haven't met till now.
And so many people, he has crossed paths with people that we know throughout the years, and we had heard of him. Yes. His rap name was Hot Carl, and a lot of people loved him, and he was, boy, I took a deep dive into the Hot Carl files. And
you had a big record deal. Record deal with Mac 10.
Mac 10 wanted to sign him. Interscope, Jimmy Iovine signed him, and it looked like he was on his way. And then Eminem gets signed by Interscope, and they decided to move him forward. It's fascinating. He's written for the ESPYs. He's a huge sports fan. He wrote for the ESPYs for 5 years.
Yes.
Huge sports fan. And an amazing dude, and just an interesting guy. Jensen Karp is on the show, a.k.a. Hot Carl. We'll talk to him later. And then later on the show, and this is what we'll talk about at the top of the show, just because it finished up this week. Christoph Waltz has an idea about a new docuseries about his favorite basketball player, the Unicorn, and he will leave that voicemail for us later. But first, The Last Dance wrapped up, Jay, and what were your thoughts overall? I guess we can sort of give a sort of a... an overview, or not an overview, but what your review of the whole thing was, because I got into a deep discussion with my friends about it recently. But the question is then the fallout that has come from it after the fact.
So my take on it in many ways was, yes, this piece was made by, it basically was made by Jordan Camp.
Right.
So
it's a promotional piece for him
for Michael
in
Jordan.
His career.
That said, I do think, you know, I...
Even still, you could tell that even though his people made it, he signed off on it. It showed his blind spots for kind of what a dick he was.
So it showed his blind spots. That's number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, it also revealed to me that he is the greatest of all time. Like, as a player. Now, as a person, I don't know. But as a player, I mean, the truth is... The fact that they sort of left the series on the thing, like, I would have come back to try for seven, mm-hmm. and I think they would have won.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would have won. Now, look,
Come close.
And the other thing that
Indiana gets them next year, but Indiana never got them. Indiana never came through.
So here's my thing. First of all, one of the reasons why, in my mind, I always disparaged those Jordan teams was, in my mind, I'm like, who did they play?
Right.
Who did they play in the finals? They didn't play anybody worth a damn. Well, those Utah teams were pretty good.
They were really good.
The Utah teams were pretty good.
Indiana was really good. Knicks were really good.
The Knicks were amazing. So they went through a gauntlet of some tough competition, whether it was in the finals or not.
Yeah.
And, it put into context a couple things for me. Number one, I think those Bulls teams in their prime, like the best team, the Bulls team that won 72 games.
Yeah, 70 games.
70 games, 70 and 12. I think that team, or 72 and 10. I think they were 72 maybe. And 10. I think that team could have beaten the best Golden State team.
Probably.
I really do think they could have.
They're a different team.
But they were a different team, but they had pieces that I think...
They were a two-point shooting team, and the Golden State Warriors that won 73 games, whereas it was a three-point shooting team.
It's a different game, but I'm saying matchups, player to player. I started thinking about things like that.
Who's guarding who?
I started thinking about, well, obviously Steph is going to guard, Kerr or... Paxson, or I think B.J. Armstrong was gone by then, but like Steph's gonna guard him, Klay Thompson's gonna guard Jordan, Draymond Green is gonna lock up with Rodman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that would have been an amazing
Iguodala on Pippen,
yeah.
And then, but then the Bulls still had a center or a coach, so like the Bulls just kind of had more pieces. I feel like that could dominate a game and bring it on. And then when it came down to it, Michael Jordan wanted the ball and wanted the shot. When you look at LeBron in a lot of the moments, including the year that he took Cleveland to the championship, the big shots were made by other people.
Mm-hmm.
And
he facilitated, so he drew all the attention to him to allow
them
to be
open. He made
the
right basketball play, but Michael Jordan was like, they know it's coming to me.
And I'm still going to do it.
And I'm still going to win.
Yeah.
I'm going to win it. And I think that's what I took away from this whole series. I also took away the fact that there was a lot of negative stuff towards Jerry Krause, and I know Jerry Krause made mistakes, and I know he was an unlikable figure in many
just
ways.
Just his wanting to dismantle that team showed you, like, why would you get rid of Phil Jackson? That is the thing that bothered me. Phil Jackson went on to win 5 championships after that. Now, he had great players with the Lakers, and they built those teams together.
True, but I wonder if he would have been able to get guys like Kobe and Shaq to come play for Chicago.
Never know.
He might have. He might have been able to. Maybe. Or someone like that.
He was, you could have locked him in and he could have been that coach for you, but then he goes on to win five more championships. Five more, which tells you that it maybe wasn't you. Jerry Krause, you picked him out of the league in, where was he, in Puerto Rico or Dominican Republic?
And you gave him his shot when it was, you got rid of Doug Collins, who was a popular coach.
It was amazing, but Phil Jackson proved that you needed him, and your desire to get rid of him in that last year, that's amazing. It's always amazing to me when the bar is set so high and you can reach it and make it. The crazy thing for me is now all the fallout afterwards. This entire week you've just heard Pippen is now pissed.
Yeah.
Pippen is mad.
Uh-huh.
Scottie Pippen, who, you know, Jordan at the beginning said, you can't think of Michael Jordan without Scottie Pippen. He was the best teammate I ever had. That's what he says in the documentary. But then he's like, the migraine thing was kind of bullshit.
Right.
You know, like, I would have never done that. The he was like, I guess it was just frustrating that he had a migraine. Like, I was almost near death after I had the pizza that I'm claiming was poisoned. And, you know, I had the flu and I still played. And I wound up, yeah, you're Michael Jordan. Yes.
Yeah.
But Pippen couldn't handle it. And as
Pippen
a result,
came back on the court with his back in two pieces.
Dude, that was, and you talk about courageous, like, why aren't you talking about that? Why aren't you saying that's the lasting legacy of that's who that guy is? So right. Forget about the flute. Like, Jordan had many opportunities to absolve Scottie in that moment, he did not do it.
So Pippen's Scottie, pissed.
So Pippen is pissed. He was mad that Pippen decided to do his knee surgery.
Instead of right after the season at the beginning of the next season.
That's right. And put them in a hole as far as that goes. He felt like that was not the, because it's not the thing that Jordan would do. Because think about Jordan, he's the one who started rehabbing right away so that he could come back in the playoffs that first year.
That's right.
So like Jordan had a different attitude towards it than his teammates, and he just required that everybody have that attitude. The fact that he said Horace Grant leaked all that stuff out, maybe Horace wasn't the guy who leaked it out.
I don't think he was.
And then you look at Jordan, you say, who are his best friends? His assistant and his dad. Well, your dad has to be your best friend.
That's right.
You're part of his family. That's what it is. But his assistant, that's your best friend. You don't have any other friends out there, like no childhood friends, no friends from, you're not friends from with guys from the North Carolina days, from college or whatnot. You have no friends from Chicago. You're just trying to take people's money. Like Will Perdue is just like, this guy's an asshole.
Right.
You know, look, you gave him a championship. And Bill Wennington, I think, had the most zen view of it at all times. Bill Wennington's like, this guy's not passing to me. He never passes to me. And I think that's where Jordan evolved on the court in terms of allowing other players to succeed. And I'll say this. I thought the best moment in the documentary, and I know you feel this way too, was Steve Kerr's speech to everybody afterwards.
How funny
was Steve Kerr at the parade and the celebration after they won,
so
and after he
Steve
hit that
Steve Kerr's
shot.
Poise at the parade where he says, you know, I knew the ball was coming to me.
Got in the timeout and Phil said, Steve, you're going to have to save
Steve,
us.
Steve, you got
to
save us. And I looked over at Mike and I'm like, here we go again. I got to bail Mike out again. And the crowd laughed.
Like a whole crowd of hundreds of thousands of people laughed.
To get a laugh from a crowd of 100,000 people and from Michael Jordan and from Phil Jackson, and then just to turn around and walk off was like he hit the shot all over again. And in that moment, I said, this guy is going to be a personality.
Yeah.
I'm sure people saw that. NBA was like, this guy's going to be, we need to get him on the mic, which they did for many years. He wasn't a great announcer.
That's right.
And then they're like, get it. This guy needs to coach.
Right.
And the story of his life and his father and,
oh my God,
and the sadness that his mom, the sadness that he had to endure.
Right.
And still had to like punch Michael in the chest when they were like,
well, he had to fight it, but that story, I think, is the type of story that Steve Kerr can then show to all of his teammates. Man, I won five championships. I won three with the Bulls. I won two more with an unbelievable organization in the Spurs. And then he's won three on his own as a coach. So this guy's won so many rings. He's such a champion, but he can say, look, when Michael Jordan punched me in the chest or punched me in the face, like I came back at him and fought back. You cannot take that. The truth of the matter is, and that, so fine, they had that on-court thing, but the reason I feel like Jordan has flailed in life after it is the fact that he could have connected with Steve Kerr, or after the fact, after this, everything is over, you stop playing and everything.
But it's interesting to me that he had to call back and get Steve Kerr's phone number. Like, that shows you how he doesn't have any of the other teammates' numbers on his team.
Michael Jordan could have sat down with Steve Kerr and said, you know, we never talked about our fathers, and maybe we should go out and play golf and just have it out and talk about
and
what we have.
And not play golf for money and not do that.
I'm not going to try and win your money, but just talk about what we both went through, because maybe there's a common ground and maybe there's a friendship that we can develop. who knows? Maybe then Michael Jordan could, I know he's with the Charlotte Bobcats, right? Is he still part owner with them?
The Charlotte, I get it.
Maybe. Right? Or the Hornets now.
The Hornets,
The Hornets, but I guess he's part owner there. I don't know what he is anymore. But the point is that, like, maybe you could develop a relationship, but he can't. Because he does not have friends, and he cannot have friends. And while he did prove himself to be the greatest of all time, he is going to forever be a tragic figure.
I mean, it's interesting to see, like, him in that house.
Even though he contained that whole thing and his people produced it, the idea that he still
like you still can't hide the fact that you were that there were warts and that you weren't able to patch up every relationship. And the lasting image of The Last Dance is like the image on the cover of The Last Dance is Jordan sitting alone,
yep,
in his big house, smoking a cigar,
yep,
hunched over.
Yep.
It's like not surrounded by Phil and all the guys who he went to war with, quote unquote. Like when you watch the special of the NC State college
team. They're all hanging out together.
They're having the best time and they're back together again. Like you would think that on some, like at least one or two of these interviews, it would be Jordan and these guys together, nope, in some way or shooting a ball around. Like,
'cause nobody wants to be with them.
Interesting.
And so there you go. All right. Let's get to a break. And then when we come back, Jensen Karp. I'm really excited to talk to him. And then later on the show,
Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to the show. As promised, our guest is an accomplished podcaster, radio host, rapper, wrote for late night TV and WWE and all that stuff.
I believe the ESPYs. Did you write for a couple of the ESPYs?
Yeah, like 5 years.
Shit, yeah.
Jensen Karp is on the show.
Hey,
AKA Hot Carl for those in the rap game who are tuning into this. Dude, it is such a treat to have you on the show. First of all, let me just start by saying, have we ever met? I feel like we must have.
I think we've passed the halls of Earwolf for a while and may have said hello while everyone passively aggressively waited for a studio to open.
Right. Okay. So that's where it was. And then part of me was like, man, has he ever done the roast battle at the Comedy Store? Because that could have been another chance to see you. But I have taken a deep dive into your stuff and your story and all that. It is so fascinating and so incredible. And I think your attitude towards it, maybe from what was reflected and what I saw, is, in my opinion, remarkably level-headed throughout the whole thing.
Well, thank you. First, I would like to take credit for that, but that is clearly a therapist's work. Over many, many years. I'm very deep in, I think, 15 years with the same therapist in order to get to the point where I could even admit I was Hot Carl.
Right.
For many years, I pretended it wasn't a real thing. It was a very odd time in my life that I've been able to accept, and it's made me understand. I use the word failure only because there's no better word for just not succeeding in the place you thought you were going to. But
we talk about this all the time. Randy and I do, at least, the definition of failure. We've always wanted to do a show about, almost a documentary style show about bands that have built a following, but for whatever reason, couldn't stay in the game anymore. And it's a show that redefines what failure is. You know, I guess if you set your goal to be like the impossible, thread the needle, be the biggest thing in the world goal, then everybody fails.
Yeah. Well, my Interscope deal, Jimmy Iovine gave me a record deal when I was like 20 years old. And when you're 20, you're so stupid. You know what I mean? It's like the minute I signed the record deal, I was like, well, I'm off to the races. This is what's going to happen for the rest of my life. And now at 40 years old, I'm like, yeah, that happens to one person every generation. Like, I mean, that can't happen.
No. And you're talking to guys who had a show on MTV when we were 25. We did the pilot when we were 24, and that's very early.
Yeah.
That's very early to get anything. And you think, well, this is what it's going to be all the time. And it's not. You got to fight. You know what I mean? You got to fight your fight and figure out what you do and reinvent yourself a million times. And it's so funny, 'cause I think like athletes, You know, like, think, look at someone like Greg Hardy. He played in the NFL. He became a domestic abuser. That's how he defined himself for a while.
Really diversifying. It's like not everyone can rush the passer and throw their girlfriend on a bed
stack of guns.
Not everyone can do that.
And now he's doing UFC where, you know, abuse is basically accepted. So, and receiving no repercussions for throwing a girl on a stack of guns. But the idea that, like, you do reinvent yourself and you have done so many things, it is fascinating. And the fact that you wrote for the ESPYs is really cool too. So you know your sports. And you have a current, the No Sports podcast, which is on iHeartRadio daily. Daily. How hard is it? We just started doing a daily podcast ourselves, our other podcast, Sklarbro Country, The Virus Edition. It is hard to do a daily show.
It's so hard. I mean, I accepted. What happened is I was on a morning radio show every day here in Los Angeles Kevin and Bean on K-Rock. And we had a crazy mainstream media picked up demise. They fired us like a day into the pandemic. And it put me in a weird situation.
What? So why did they fire you guys the day? I'm sorry, I didn't follow it at that point.
But it's okay. Listen, they'll tell you it was ratings based. I don't see how that's necessarily the case, considering our ratings hadn't moved in about a year.
Yeah.
And so, we're not a cheap show. You know, we have 6-7 people on the morning cast, and I think Entercom has now, you know, even in the sports world, we've heard what they're doing with WFAN asking Francesca to take a break and Boomer taking like a 25% salary cut. So I think it was some financial stuff going on, but you know, it was just bad timing. The audience in podcast and in radio, they don't want to change their patterns right now. It's just not with everything that's going on, and seeing the response from the listeners was incredible. And their ratings, if they had problems with our ratings, wait till they see the next book. That's been nice to see. So I was approached by this company, Treeform Media, who was so great about this, and immediately, same as me, started thinking about these athletes who have been practicing their sport since they were like 5 years old every day. They were the best person in their city since the minute they picked up a ball.
Legendary. The worst person in the NFL, okay? The worst person on number 12 guy in the NBA, Brad fucking Sellers
Scalabrine
is the best player that anybody from his town has ever seen. Basketball.
I know. I one time took a taxi in Vegas, and a guy asked me what my favorite basketball team was, and I said the Clippers. And this is before the blow up, Lob City and stuff. And he goes, "Oh, I went to high school. The greatest basketball player who's ever come through my city was on the Clippers." And I go, "Who?
Chris
who
Kamen.
Was it?" Even worse, Keith Kloss.
Keith Kloss.
And I realized, he goes, "Keith Kloss got every chick in the whole high school." And I was like, this is insane. This is just the first time these guys have never played the sport. And I was so interested to talk to them, and they gave me the opportunity to speak to a different athlete every day. It's insane. I've had, you know, Al Harrington on to talk about his weird weed industry empire that he's running. I've had Jay Williams on to talk about that weird cruise ship idea he had.
What cruise ship idea did he have?
He wanted the NBA to restart on cruise ships.
I thought his idea would be to have cruise ships powered by his destroyed motorcycle.
No, but we did talk about his destroyed motorcycle. I mean, I've had on guys like Amir Garrett talks about his fighting career a little bit. Gavin Lux, who was supposed to be Rookie of the Year this year. We have on different people every day to talk about both their quarantine and if they're missing sports like I am.
Well, it's amazing that it's so funny because in watching a little thing that you talked about your history and your love of third base, and of course your interaction with MC Search, I want to just, because it's funny, that for us, like Jay and I are always like, the greatest Jews in the history of Jews were the Beastie Boys, hands down. They're in the Jewish Hall of Fame. It's them and David Ben-Gurion. Like, I don't even know who else, maybe Richard Dreyfuss, I don't know. But I mean, the idea that like, but we were huge third base fans. We were like Gas Face fans. We just, I mean, that album.
Professor P. Nice, he came on Cheap Seats and did a thing on Cheap Seats.
Baseball guy.
Yeah, big baseball guy. Lives in Cooperstown. Doesn't he live in Cooperstown?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you've Googled him in a while. It might not be a safe Google.
Oh, is he just talking about how coronavirus is all made up?
He was criminally charged with frauding baseball cards.
Oh.
Yeah, like cutting them and stuff. Super weird story. But he was the curator of the Little League Baseball Hall of Fame for a while. Like he was really deep into baseball. Deep. So much so. Yeah, so much so that he got arrested.
Look, if you're involved with the Little League Hall of Fame and the worst crime you have is falsifying baseball cards,
yeah,
I'm okay with
it.
That
could be much worse.
It could be way worse. But I talked to Serge still like weekly. We're still very close. He's one of the nice guys.
Tell Serge that we love him so much. I just love, like, I'm sure he'll be like, who? But he's, that whole thing was the, again, Serge was like really socially conscious. You go back and look at like he was like standing up for women and standing. I mean, he was like putting it out there and like going after MC Hammer and like, just an insane.
In the gas face, he went after like South African white leadership. Like, you know,
black cat is bad luck. Bad guys went black. Must have been a white guy who started all that.
That was
right off the top.
But there was something fun about him. Even like gas face, there was something fun about them and the Beastie Boys. Not to lump them together because they're not the same by any stretch. It's like saying the Bangles and the Go-Go's were the same. They're not. Yeah. They're not the same just because they were all women groups. Yeah. No. So like they're not the same, but there was a level of fun that I think Jay and I took from that. And we were like, this is how we need to perform. We need to have fun with each other. When we're doing our bits and we interact with each other, we need to interact like the Beasties interact. We need to have fun. Mm-hmm. That's what I saw a lot from your performance thing. And I'm sure that carries through in everything that you do, like a level of fun, level of interaction. And just, I feel like rappers get that.
Yeah. I've tried my hardest to run away from rap. I gotta be honest. Like I've tried my hardest to focus purely on, I've done stuff for Sacha Baron Cohen. I've done the ESPYs. I've done everything I've done has involved rap at some point, and I don't try to do it. It doesn't come up in my mind. It just somehow organically gets there. And I think it's because of a mentality I've had since battling, since freestyling, since, you know, being able to jump in. It's very improv based, obviously. Totally. And I think it's just the form. I think it's, you know, like when we worked on Who Is America for Sasha.
Yeah.
Sasha rapped, obviously. That was where LG started and whatever. And,
totally.
And so we talked a lot about rap, and it never was like, let's involve rap in this show. And then I think maybe a month or two in, we came up with, you know, there was a left-wing character, really out there liberal, and a Bernie Sanders kind of type. And we were just throwing around ideas. And I don't even think I pitched it. I think it was, let's have him rap battle. And then there I was setting up the Atlanta rap battle. And it's just like, it happens in every situation. Like you said, it's just the energy is there. And I think even without Googling me or finding out my past, I think it's just a weird, you know, kind of a new wave thing I can't explain.
I think there's something to it in the, I liken it to like improv. Okay. There's a lot of bad improv out there.
Yes.
There's a lot of bad rap out there. There's just a lot of bad rap. But if you can be original and you can be yourself, it's still a really beautiful medium. Like the other day I was showing my son, who's 11, who's now just starting to get into the things that I'm into. I showed him a bunch of Mac Lethal videos.
Oh, yeah. Love Mac.
We love Mac Lethal. We kind of know him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we ever do a show in Kansas City, definitely have him on. Mm-hmm. But what I loved about what he was doing is, okay, yeah, so his hook or his catch is that he can rap so fast and so quickly, and just the sheer volume of words, 1,000 words in 2 minutes is insane. But like all that kind of stuff is, yes, that's part of what he does. But at the same time, I love his rhymes. He's funny and he's creative and he uses humor and he's original and he has a voice. Now, there are probably 10,000 crappy Mac Lethal ripoffs who suck.
There are. Yeah, there are a million fake Mac Lethals. I love him purely also because he's put in the due. You know, he's done what he needed. He's been around forever. I mean, he's paid his dues. And he's a good rapper. At the end of the day, I've always argued that you have to be a good rapper. And I mean with us, like our feeling of what rap is, not just like what Lil Uzi Vert is. At the end of the day, you still need, Nicki Minaj is still very popular because she can rap.
Right. Yep.
Like she doesn't use it a lot, but if she needs to, she can rap. 2 Chainz can rap. Even the people you think are annoying, I think that Chance the Rapper can rap. Like they can do their gospel, they can do all those things, but at the end of the day, it's still the art form that leads the way.
If you walk around and say, I still walk around and say, I am not Jasmine, I am Aladdin. I say that because I'm making fucking eggs. Like, of course I'm not Jasmine, I am Aladdin.
Well, but there is something when you see a crew of people on stage, there is a teamwork element to it that I think equates to sports. And there is a teamwork of, you know, what was Stockton to Malone? It was,
or who were the Bulls to Jordan? That's the most relevant.
The handoff. Yeah. It was the pick and pick and roll is rap. You know what I mean? You're going to go this way and I'm going to go this way. I'm going to toss the rhyme to this person and then he's going to pick it up. Yeah. So and then for us in comedy being a duo, that's exactly what it is. It is so, it's musical. It's rap because you're speaking. And at the same time, there is a sports element because we grew up with sports in our lives. There's that element to it on that level. How did you get involved with the ESPYs? I mean,
I had done this UCB show for a while called The Live Read. And it was basically, I would take some, you know, like Jason Reitman was doing live reads at the MoMA or whatever. And I thought it would be funny to do very bad movies at UCB. Like, I just thought it was a funny thing to take it as serious as Jason Reitman was doing it, but to do it at UCB for crap movies.
So funny.
Yeah. And so the first one I ever did, I found the Entourage script at someone's house, but like a year before that movie came out, and we did that secretly.
Movie.
And it was so, I mean, it's as bad as you ended up seeing it, but I mean, we did the live read with like Rob Hubel and Joe Latruglio, and it was a great live read. And so people were like, what's next? What's next? And I knew I wouldn't be able to steal scripts all the time. So I got an old Space Jam shooting script and I was like, I want it to be Space Jam to do it. And I somehow got to Blake Griffin and told Blake, I knew he was a huge Space Jam guy. I knew one of his birthday parties was Space Jam themed.
He's so funny. He's genius.
So I got it to him. He was like, yeah, I'll do Michael Jordan. And then all the rest of the cast fell in place. DeAndre Jordan came and played Charles Barkley. And we had Paul Scheer, Ben Schwartz. We had, actually, funny enough, when we were just friends, my wife, who played Topanga on Boy Meets World, Danielle Fishel, she came and played, and she was just a friend at that time. And we had, I mean, it was Gerard Carmichael was an extra. You know what I mean? It was like a crazy cast. And so it caught the attention of the ESPYs. They thought it was really funny. Drake was hosting my first year.
We were in the crowd. Great
ESPYs. And they called me and they said, you know, we want to do something with Blake and Drake. We know you have a great relationship with Blake, which was like kind of BS. I had just done Space Jam with him. And so they said, do you have any ideas for Drake? And I was like, yeah, I mean, that's my whole life has been rap and basketball. This is made for me. And that's so they hired me that year. And then I had done it 5 years in a row until I think last year when I had my kid.
Oh my God. That's phenomenal. We were at that once. You worked with like Morgan Murphy. And,
Morgan was good. So great.
Talented, funny. It's, you know, I mean, we made a career out of doing sports and comedy.
Yeah,
and
you were the first, really, in my mind. I don't remember seeing it before you guys, really.
Also, there is a level to it. There are things that you can, people who know sports and understand sports, there you can make the jokes that they would understand in a sports sense. It's a language.
I mean, I think it's funny because I've, you know, going back and sort of looking at some cheap seats because we put it on our YouTube page. Yeah. We've just started populating our YouTube page with small cheap seats and going back and rewatching it. What I realized, and this is one of the reasons why I love the ESPYs and one of the reasons why I love, you know, the humor that we all try and create is that we are trying to make comedy, at least on cheap seats we were, that stood toe to toe with The Daily Show and Conan and all that other stuff. We wanted it to be people's favorite comedy show or in that realm. And then at the same time, we didn't have to apologize for the most specific, like there was no such thing as inside baseball. In fact, if you were inside baseball, you were at the right spot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we make some joke about Dave Parker's nickname being the Cobra, like in connection to his, you know, schlong, like that's a nod to all the people who know that's why he was called the Cobra. And when we go that deep, we joke about, you know, Lenny Dykstra's car wash.
I mean, interesting side note, I can't believe that Dave Parker's dick was poisonous. I mean, that to me is
it was very dark.
That is unbelievable.
Well, what's crazy is that he would tell women, you have to suck the venom
out of it. Oh, come on.
Got it coming. There it is.
There it is. We got there. We got there, Jensen. We got there. It's amazing. That show was consistently wonderful. From like the John Hamm hosted one, and he's so goddamn funny, and he knows his sports. So he's a good buddy of ours. Knows his sports so well.
Yeah.
I just think
Lance Armstrong was good.
Lance, I did not work that one, but that's the highest ranked one. That's the highest rated one of all time, which is still weird. Other than the Caitlyn Jenner year, which I was on, that became obviously the highest rated one. But before that, it was Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
But I, you know, it's funny because when I think about like influences for me in comedy, I think it's always a miss for people like me or you or the 25 other comedians that get hired for sports stuff. You know, I think I was just as influenced by stand-up as I was Oberman, Kilbourn, Dan Patrick, you know, like the real run of SportsCenter. Like those guys, the Jumanji stuff, all that stuff, they had all these inside jokes that I think I grabbed onto at a young age. And that was funny to me. That was just as much as the Steve Martin records that my parents had given me.
It's so funny because people ask us, who were your influences? Well, there were no twins doing it.
None.
The Smothers Brothers already did what they did. And that was, we didn't want to have a straight man and a funny man. And they did it better than us. Our old joke was that our mom loved the Smothers Brothers more than us. But the idea that like, who were we looking to? And I would absolutely say from a sports sense, those This Is SportsCenter commercials that Wieden and Kennedy did.
Also the relationship between the two anchors on that show, the ability to break into someone else's highlight and comment on what they were doing or to reinforce or to push each other.
Kilbourn, there'd be a shot of like New York City for a Knicks game and you see like the Empire State Building and Kilbourn be like, there he is, the big man in the middle.
And you're like, it was also, they fourth walled so much. Like a lot of news didn't. So I remember the idea that they would look at the camera and joke and then laugh at each other, then mess up and keep the mess ups. I mean, all that stuff seemed to gravitate towards comedy more than it did sports.
Well, it goes back to having fun.
I mean, I just watched the Beastie Boys documentary on the Apple Plus. And I mean, I don't know if you went to the live show here in LA at the Montalban or you watched the,
I watched.
Mm-hmm. Did you read the book?
I read the book, liked the book more than the special, but I did appreciate both.
I agreed. I mean, I thought the book was incredible. I mean, the chapter on Mitchell is worth, is the whole book. And it's like that in its own right is so worth buying the book and reading it.
This is me picking stuff apart that shouldn't be picked apart, but I didn't think they looked comfortable on stage. I think I liked it as a written word.
I think they didn't look comfortable on stage. And I found that kind of charming. That was just me because
it's
very cute. This is what I loved about it. And this is as a performer who stood on stages before, like what they did on stage as rappers and what they did in their interaction with each other, that was something that for us was like super influential. We wanted to be the Beastie Boys. You come in with one thing, I come in with another thing. We both end on the punchline together. Like that was very, talk about influences, that was very influential. And then they're up there kind of doing their thing and they were a little uncomfortable. I'm like, this shit is hard. Comedy and just talking and just doing and telling who you are, that stuff is hard. But I just, there was a level of fun to it. And I always felt like those guys were, like the Beastie Boys ABA shirt to me
was
like a big, like, oh, you can connect that together because the ABA was this free flowing. You look back at the ABA, like.
Do you remember they used to do the weave on stage?
Yes.
Yeah, they used to do the weave.
That's just so funny. I mean, again, as kids who went to the Globetrotters, like actually saw the Globetrotters as kids in St. Louis where we grew up and watched the Globetrotters cartoon, just that concept of, we did a Cheap Seats episode where like
the went to like a prison.
We're like, I don't know if I'd fuck with these people. It's like,
are they going to, they threw like water on the warden and the place went crazy.
I was like nuts. I was like,
it's going to be a riot. Like you're inciting Metal Mark Lemon.
Very bad idea.
You can't have Mark Lemon just chanting Attica because that's going to start some stuff.
Yeah, Sweet Lou has a different definition there.
Right. But it was
Sarah Awa O. Do you remember he got a reference in a Beastie Boys song?
I got more hits than Sarah Awa O.
And I remember who knew what that was in hip hop? Like it was so unknown that those kind of sports references to me connected heavily.
And I got mad hits like Rod Carew. Like it was Rod Carew. That's another as a Jew. The Rod Carew technically not Jewish, but he went to our uncle's synagogue down in Orange County, which
listen, we'll take him. We'll take him.
I mean, technically he's not, but he married a Jew and like she was part of like the synagogue's first group. I mean, we knew a lot about it, but there was something like our, again, it's the reason why we love Gar Reines, the batting stance guy, why he's our guy.
Yeah.
Like Gar's, and again, this goes to sports and comedy. So Gar hits us right in the fucking, like right in the sternum of it all.
Part of the Venn diagram of everything.
So Gar's thing about Rod Carew, which I just love so much, is that he was so relaxed when he, and he did this on Letterman. This is why it was so good. I highly recommend going watching his clip on Letterman. He was so relaxed when he was at bat that like between pitches, he would fall asleep. And it just was like, it was so... But like, okay, that's something that you get and you would love, and we get and we love. And I mean, we're a little older than you. We're 8 years older than you. So I'm sure you didn't grow up watching like the baseball bunch and that sort of stuff. That's a little before your time.
Just barely. But I mean, like I was like, even look, I mean, I look at it as baseball cards, really. It's like 86 was my first year. So I remember that Topps year. And that was where that was where I was obsessive. That was where I knew like Keith Hernandez's wife's name. Like that was the gross sort of like, that was where the stats started to run. And then 87 had the wooden borders and that's just off to the races.
Yeah.
That's... We were 83. So if you go back a few years, 83, where the little circle was in the lower corner. And so you had two photos on one card, which is insane.
Insane.
That concept. 83 and 84 did the square. So they kind of ran through that run. Those were big influential years for us. And then like our cousin gave us his 1972 complete set of cards. That's where the letters like are in an arc above.
Yeah, I love that year.
And they're like sort of coming 3D and they're
so good.
Almost look like a theater. Like
you're showing. By the way, when people are like making mock-ups of old baseball cards, they kind of use that mock-up. Like they without even knowing it, like that's the one they use. That
72.
I mean, I'll say one of the best moments for us, and we've done a lot of great things in our career, was having Topps when they did like Allen and Ginter did a series on it. Like not a series, but like we got our own baseball cards.
But when we did the web series Back on Topps, which had a lot of
people
in it, we went to New York City. We went down to the Topps offices, which was way down near like Wall Street, below Wall Street, like almost in Battery Park. And we went up into this nondescript building. We go up into these offices that could be anywhere in the frickin' world. And you have no idea where you
are. Classic New, did you ever live in New York?
No, but I went to the Topps building.
Okay, great.
Okay, so we go up and they're like, hey, you want to go in the relic room? And we're like, the relic room? And we're like, yeah, we want to go in the relic room. We go into this room and they're like, we're like, what is this thing? It's this giant brown pinstripe suit. They're like, that's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's draft day suit.
Like, can we put it on? They're like, yeah, just put it on.
They're like, what's it? They're going to cut it up and put it in cards. We're like, what's this over here? Oh, that's Tom Seaver's jersey. I put on Tom Seaver's jersey and I'm like, they're like, you want to wear it for a day? As long as you bring it back, you're good. And so I walked around New York.
Unbelievable.
Tom Seaver's old jersey. Randy put on Robin Yount's jersey
and it fit. I was like, Jesus Christ, I need to just wait.
I did end up there for a very weird reason. I didn't work with their sports division. I worked with a man who was in like a hallway. He didn't even have his own office. For Garbage Pail Kids.
Oh, yes.
So I found myself in some sort of weird marketing thing trying to bring them back, or I forget why I was even there, but it was a situation where I went into that guy's terrible office. Sports obviously dominates the building. Yeah, and
in a bathroom.
Yeah, literally the boiler room.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, we talk for a while and then he takes me to his relic room and I was like, oh man, this is all really crazy. It's like, you know, uncut first series Garbage Pail Kids, which is like my year wheelhouse, you know?
Yeah.
And I got home and he sent me the full uncut first series.
Oh my God. That's an amazing thing to have.
Yeah. I have it framed and stuff. It's like, you know, you look it up on eBay and it's like one shows up every 5 years and it goes for a ton of dough. But this guy, like the Seaver jersey, he's just like, I guess I'll send him one.
That is so cool.
Yeah. I didn't even think that it's like, oh my God, you're living a dream. I had to get back the Seaver jersey, but I wore it around for a day. It was
so great.
So let me ask you this and then we'll take a break and then we've got some stories and stuff. And we were so appreciative of your time.
Oh, thank you.
And again, for those who are out there, the No Sports podcast.
Yeah, No Sports Report.
No Sports Report. It's on iHeartRadio. Can people get it in podcast form every day?
Anywhere. Yeah. 30 minutes, basically. I interview Justin Turner this coming week, which I'm very excited about. You know, I've really tried to hit the wide spectrum. We're just getting into soccer and hockey now. And with all these rumors going around about seasons coming back,
great. That's a wonderful, thank you for dovetailing the segue beautifully. But so where do we stand on this? I mean, I know what sports means to us, and you know, I'm sure it means the same thing to you, not having it, just like not being able to watch. What are you doing? What are you watching? How are you getting through this period of time? Are you watching old games on YouTube? What are you doing? And do you think, first of all, I think baseball, if they can get it sorted out, which I can't even say they're going to get it sorted out, but if they can, starting and doing an 82 game season is not a bad idea.
No, it all makes sense, except for the idea that I assume, you being Jewish like I am, I cannot accept that everyone's going to be safe. I just can't. No. I for some reason I can't grasp my brain. And then hearing these NBA people talking this week about, you know, if somebody's positive, let's not stop play. What are you talking about? Yes,
exactly. You have to stop play.
By the way, Popovich is 71.
Yeah.
71 years old, a treasure in the NBA, someone that we should be protecting. And you know, every coach is over 60, you know, most coaches nowadays, I guess it's not everyone, but a lot of coaches are over 65.
So this is the time right now where Popovich should pass the reins to the woman on his bed.
The woman, which she's already done once without trying to.
I know, I'm saying,
I was thinking about that so much. I wonder if like NBA coach, they could build for NBA coaches, like,
the Hannibal Lecter mask?
Yeah, some sort of, you know, like a Rip Hamilton.
Like a Rip Hamilton, but down below the chin. And look, man, and when you're in the box and you're coaching, you got to wear this, period. Yeah.
Yeah. I do like the idea of wheeling out Popovich, though, like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, wheel.
Hello, Clarice.
Listen, I don't feel comfortable. I talk to these athletes. They seem more comfortable than I am. I just feel like it seems stupid to put all this resource into it. All these tests are going to go to make sure that we see a game. It's like, I love sports as much as the next person. I think we can sit this out for a little bit. I don't think, you know, as much as it pains me to say, I think LeBron ends up with a championship if they stop the season, which kills me as a Clippers guy. I just think,
I know. How about this? I mean, we had Jeannie Buss on our podcast 2 weeks ago. And I mean, how about, first of all, the craziness of Kobe's death being overshadowed by COVID. That's just,
it's still all a simulation. And I feel like the Kobe stuff was what started it. Like, what, I can't agree on most, I can't understand most things. And Kobe was the first one where I'm like, I don't feel real.
But this season being what it was, like, and this season being, I would say, a tribute to Kobe in many ways.
I mean, I talk about this all the time on this podcast. My son is 11. This is the season. This is his coming of age season. So he was coming into his ability to, you know, every 5 minutes, check the standings and every, you know,
like, it's not going to change from 11 in the morning to 11:05.
And he just walks by his phone. He's like, NBA standings.
By the way, 11 is the jersey year too. That's where you start buying jerseys.
So he's got a Harden jersey and he's got it. And he's also got a Kawhi jersey, obviously, because we're Clippers fans. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that I think the way the league is being marketed and the way that guys bounce between teams now, it is kind of like, yes, like when we were kids, you loved your team and you fucking hated everybody else. Like, you just, I hated everyone. I didn't have a favorite player on another team. I didn't like Pete Rose because every, you know, 5 weeks he came to town and beat up on my team. Yeah. I didn't like, you know, Ryan Sandberg because he was on the Cubs and we were Cardinals fans. But my son loves other teams' players because of the YouTube videos that he watches them in, and because of the marketing and because of the All-Star game. Like Trae Young, he loves Trae Young.
But could you have imagined when we were kids, if we saw our five favorite players summer vacationing together on a raft?
Yeah.
Like, what would your mind would have been like? The banana boat. We never even knew what that was.
The first, when I watched Fire and Ice, this is how much it's ingrained that like the rivals hate each other. Mm-hmm. When I watched Fire and Ice, the HBO documentary about Borg and McEnroe, and we remember those. So again, this is, we're dating you, but like, I remember those matches. I remember that Wimbledon. I remember all of it. I thought they hated each other. Yeah. I thought they hated each other. To see in this documentary that they loved each other, that McEnroe revered Borg.
He wanted to be Borg. Yeah.
He wanted to be Borg, but he couldn't. He wasn't as good looking. He wanted his hair to grow, but his hair was like a rat's nest. He like couldn't do it. That to me was like, it was fascinating to see that and revelatory in the same way of what you're just talking about.
I couldn't imagine them being friends. I mean, again, like you said, I wrote for WWE, so I watched wrestling growing up. And I think that day you learn that they're just all friends in the back, yep, and there's no bad guy or good guy. It's like, it really is sort of a big moment for kids these days. Like you said, these mixtapes on YouTube, and they're not really picking teams as much as they are superstars. And I think that's probably good, because it puts the power in the players' hands, not the Donald Sterlings of the world, like we were forced to root for,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so the collective bargaining is obviously in the hands of the players, which is nice. But yeah, at 11, I would not want my seasons to go away. That would be very hard.
Especially this season, because you knew that the championship was going to be played on Staples Center court every night, being a different thing. Like nobody had to travel. You sleep in your own bed.
Yeah.
You just change the visitor in the other locker room. And it's like, oh, it's my crazy. God, that would have been
the Western Conference Finals.
But he, you know, you got to look at it too. Like I also, as a Dodgers guy, like we were going to destroy the Astros this year. This was a baseball storyline that would have been incredible to watch. And now
everyone was going to try and destroy the Astros.
All of it. And by the way, it was going to hit pop culture massively.
Yeah.
I think it was going to be a mass beyond. It was going to be a mainstream story. I think everyone was excited to see what happens, and that would have built. And now, you know, this time off is really going to ease up on them. And I feel like, is it worth putting all this resource, all this possible risk versus reward stuff, just so we can see sports? It's hard for me to say yes.
All right, let's take a break. That's so awesome. When we come back, we've got quick hits. Jensen Karp is with us. He's got a daily podcast, a no sports show.
No sports report.
No sports report. You get on iHeartRadio, but you can listen to it there.
Anywhere, yeah.
Get it anywhere you get podcasts. When we come back, quick hits, got some crazy stories. It's View from Cheap Seats. Stay with us. But still I close my eyes.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. As we want to remind you, we did just start this YouTube page, and we have compiled a lot of stuff that we love. We're trying to give you guys more content.
We mentioned Back on Top, so we're going to get those episodes and put them all up there so you can see those. We did a web series called Held Up, which was basically cut together as a movie, and you can get it on Crackle. They played it on HBO Canada. It was really a blast to do with Nick Kroll, Steve Agee, Tig Notaro, Eddie Pepitone, Harmar Superstar, all these great people. So that's going to be on there, called Held Up, and a bunch of other stuff and Cheap Seats and stuff. Anything else? What about, can people get your book still?
It had a nice little run during quarantine. It's called Kanye West Owes Me $300, and it is the entire, it's just a clickbaity title, but it is the entire story from the day I decide to start rapping to the day I decide to stop it. And I didn't know until I wrote it down. I was like, this is a totally insane in music industry story that no one else can tell. And I was excited to tell it.
I cannot wait to read it. That is on my list of books to read.
It's crazy. A lot of Search talk in there, so you'll appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I love MC Search. Man, I love him so much. I really, really do. He was like just one of those guys who, like, again, came up at the exact time, the long Tribe Called Quest, that stuff.
It was, I feel like Pete Nice played at St. John's. I feel like he may have played ball at St. John's.
Played basketball at there, or baseball?
No, basketball. He was a really good basketball player. I don't know if it was St. John's, but I feel like maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but he was
giving him too much credit.
He was a really good college basketball player.
Pete Nice, man. Didn't he when he was taking time not sitting on a throne with a scepter in the videos, didn't he? I think he maybe had a basketball that he tossed around. Who knows?
His American is most noted. Let's see.
All right. Early career. I love that you're doing the Google search for us.
You go on.
You're doing the MC Google search. All right.
I think, listen, I don't think he played at St. John's, but he was a very good high school and possibly, I think he played college as well. He was very good.
Love it. All right. Let's get into some quick hits. Jensen Karp is with us. We're getting down. I don't know if you read this about former LA Laker Shannon Brown. What did you think of Shannon Brown as a Laker?
Well, he was a bust, wasn't he? I mean, I feel kind like.
Of. Well, I watched his McDonald's All-American game recently. Oh. On, and he was
a beast.
He was the best player in that game.
I like, know. He high school beast. I remember him in high school. And I, but he then
he was picked 25th in the draft.
Yeah. Okay. Was he Michigan State? Did he play Michigan State?
I don't know. Maybe he was arrested for aggravated assault after an incident at his home in Georgia, as first reported by TMZ. The alleged incident took place on May 2nd, occurred when a couple looking for homes in Tyrone, Georgia, noticed a for sale sign in Brown's front yard. It's, by the way, should you be going around to people's houses these days? I know it's freaking Georgia, but like... No. The virtual tour on Redfin would actually work. Everybody's
or maybe back. Take a few months off of buying houses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen,
you have to sell it.
Your interest rates are down. So I understand.
Listen, Thurston Howell III. You could take a couple days off of buying property.
Especially this house. If you're in the market for Shannon Brown's house. All right. So there was a sign in front yard. The couple was interested in touring and they noticed that Brown's gate was open. And so it's maybe not the hours of the open house. There isn't a sign saying this is when it's open, but they were told to come in.
By the who? House.
I guess Shannon Brown. And it seems pretty innocuous. If you want to sell your house, a for sale sign is like an invitation to be like, oh, this house is for sale. I can go in there and ask, even though we're in a pandemic right now. So Brown allegedly confronted them after that before letting them leave. Now, did he think they were going to like try and rob him? I don't really.
I mean, as an athlete, you're always, I assume you're always nervous you're going to get like a robbery or your chain snatched or whatever happens. But like, I do think when you're at your house and there's a real estate sign up, I think you know why someone's at the gate.
The couple claims, however, that Brown fired 5 or 6 gunshots at them as they left. That is not what you expect leaving. You expect to leave with like a pricing sheet, maybe a cookie.
You don't expect to be part of the Hunger Games in Georgia.
Much like his pro career, though, he did not hit them with the shots, no?
He missed five shots and missed them all. He was over.
Perfect.
I wonder if after he shot at them, the couple shouted behind, back over their shoulders, okay, we'll lift the inspection. Some people
I would just yell brick and keep running.
Yeah. Brown, he was bonded out of jail on May 4th. He has not yet issued a public comment. He does not have a prior criminal record. Again, this is like, why now, dude? Why you actually managed, again, as we were talking in the first segment, how difficult it is to make it on any level. The guy who was a bust in the NBA is the greatest basketball player. His community, his college.
Shannon Brown. I watch him in that McDonald's All-American game. He's one of the best players I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Right?
High school career was insane. I remember it.
So, but he had a difficult time in the NBA because it's tough.
Yeah.
You can be the best comedian ever, and if you don't have Seinfeld-like show, people are like, oh, what happened? Where are they now? No, they're working.
When I interviewed Al Harrington for the podcast, I looked into his stats because I thought he was a bust in my mind. You forget he played like 15 years in the NBA.
Yeah.
He averaged over 13 points a game for his entire career and had like 5.5 rebounds. I was like, that's a bajillionaire nowadays. Like he would have a huge contract.
He's Al Harrington, not Othella Harrington.
Folks. Big difference.
Big difference. All right. Brown had not played in the NBA since the 2014-15 season. He was selected number 25th overall by the Cavs in 2006 and spent parts of 2 seasons there before landing with the Bulls. He ultimately played for 8 teams. So he had some contracts there. Charlotte, LA, Phoenix Suns, Miami Heat, New York Knicks, and San Antonio Spurs. He played in the D League and the Big Three. And now he's going to kind of be remembered like
in the real estate
market. Like this estate just got real.
Did you watch Big Three games?
I watched Big Three games. My favorite part is Charles Oakley was a coach. Yeah. And my thing was, how much coaching is going on?
I don't think much. I did go to one of those games. and they go by very fast, obviously. But he, I mean, they're breathing so heavy, man. It's incredible. I can like hear them in the arena, like like people were just gasping. Yeah,
it is correct.
All right, so the four-time Iditarod champion Lance Mackey, I guess that's a name that we should all know from the Iditarod, has been disqualified from this year's race due to a positive test for the drug methamphetamine. That tells you how little respect a four-time champion of a sport gets. That's number one. And still, like, the athletes are the dogs. Yes, I know. I know that it takes stamina, and I know that it's like a different kind. So how is that a performance-enhancing drug if you're on methamphetamines? How?
If anything, I think it hurts his performance.
You think so? Like, weed would be better because it calms him down in that moment.
Yeah, he's on this sled for hours or whatever it is. I mean, days. That guy, he should be at home. Days, yeah, he should be at, he just wants to go home and clean, right? Listen,
how much,
Molly or something.
How little respect does a four-time champion of this sport get?
None. You know,
like,
none.
I'm sure if he goes out, nobody recognizes him unless he's with the dogs. It's got to be hard.
It's awful. More people have seen Snow Dogs than even seen any of his races. It's terrible.
What if Mackey's rap name was Cold Carl?
I'd allow it. I'd allow Mackey, it at this point.
Thank you. Mackey finished. He
said he plans to seek treatment. Thank God. But look, to me, you should be testing the dogs. Like, test them for whatever's in their food, because that's the thing. Like, look, obviously, it's the same with horse racing for me. When a jockey is on the horse, I'm like, yeah, you're achieving something by
pulling all the right. You're pushing. Maybe he's pushing the right buttons. Jay, you don't know enough about the.
I don't know enough. I don't necessarily know enough about it necessarily, but it is the horse that wins the race. Correct.
Yeah, if you don't have a good horse, you're fucked.
I again feel that I think drug testing in sports is too strict already, but like let him do math.
Let him do math. He said, I'm tired of lying to myself, family and friends and fans who've supported me, rooted for me, or been inspired to me. I apologize.
You say fans or fan?
Fan.
Fans. Okay. Just making
sure. I'm proud of the guy for admitting that he has a problem and seeking treatment. I do think he should apologize to the dogs. Because think about it. Now, we've all seen...
He should sit down and be like, I've been a very bad role boy.
The idea that, like, when you see comedians, like a ventriloquist comedian, they have a special relationship with the dummy.
Sure.
That...
Otto and George?
Regular people can't understand what that is. And so... I can only assume if you're out on the Alaskan, in the just the wilderness with these dogs, you are going to start communicating with them on a deep level.
Yeah.
You're going to be like,
you're alone. It's like dark, like 18 hours out of the day. You're with these dogs. You're like, let me put some peanut butter on my ball.
What is that? What did you say, Lorraine? Like, you, like he will definitely turn to a dog and be like, what did you say?
And imagine that on meth.
How much more fun would that be on meth?
Come I don't know on. If he needs it. It sounds like he has natural meth.
I know.
He said he's been open in the past about his substance abuse involving cocaine and alcohol. Cocaine to me is just a little post-Iditarod partying.
Yeah.
You know, gotta burn some of that steam off. Can you imagine all the Iditarod tail he got? And you know that's what he called it. The man and the woman who is the Iditarod champion, like, that's what they get. They get Iditarod tail just from the championship. And it's only a couple of people.
Similar to truck drivers, though. I mean, they do those uppers and those smelling salts and all that stuff. Like, you got, I mean, this is the same thing, man. They got to stay awake.
Let him
baseball in the 1960s.
Everyone, that's right.
Like the Bad News Bears go to the Houston Astrodome. Instead of chanting, let them play, we're saying, let them do meth.
Let them meth. Remember, this is sort of like a remember when this happened kind of a moment, because it marks such a different time, feels like a century ago, when LaShawn McCoy ruined the Avengers Endgame for everyone.
On Twitter. It's the best.
He just tweeted, RIP Tony Stark. Dick!
Like on Thursday. Like, he did it like a Wednesday it came out.
With people actively saying, please don't do that.
He was like, what?
But here's my thing.
That was shady. That was shady.
His nickname is shady. So like, obviously, and like, wasn't he? And so he went on. The reason why it's relevant today is he went on our buddy Kyle Brand and Peter Schrager. Those are two buddies of ours who do Good Morning Football. on NFL Network, and he went on and he said, quote, "It was the worst decision I made in my entire life." The worst. Now, weren't you accused of trying to rob your ex-girlfriend of jewelry you gave her?
Yeah.
Yes, it was settled. Yes,
charges were dropped, but still.
Like ruining Endgame. I don't want to blame the victim here, but I'm going to say this right now. If Endgame means so much to you, if the movie is something you're looking forward to like nobody's business, starting Tuesday of that week, I'm getting off of social media until I see the movie. Mm-hmm. It's like LaShawn McCoy shouldn't be the one spoiling that movie for you. Mm-hmm. Like you're following social media too closely on a week that you don't want to hear spoilers. That's on you.
I remember him doing it, and I remember how mad people were. And I remember thinking to myself, this isn't going to affect the movie at all. It made like bajillions of dollars. Right. People will still see it even when you know the ending. But I also wondered where the Venn diagram was between people who felt spoiled on Endgame and were following him.
LaShawn McCoy? It's probably, again, because it was such a big movie. Yeah. Like, I'm sure that probably crossed over to a lot of people. But I just love, to me, the bigger thing is that he was saying going on Good Morning Football was the worst decision he ever made.
Going on Good Morning Football.
Oh. Oh.
Good Morning Football was fine. It was his decision to ruin Endgame.
I thought it was going on Good Morning Football. No, if that was the case, then...
That's rough, yeah.
He harkened back. But then there's a moment when I hear that story, and Jensen, you'll probably agree with me on this one, like, where you're like, how sweet and quaint that was, that, like, someone could ruin, like, us all going out freely to a movie. Like,
man, those days.
Another time.
Another time. I watch movies now, and I see people hugging, and I'm like, what is going on? What happened? Where have we gone with this?
Feels very odd.
Yeah.
Dude, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I'm excited. I really am excited to read your book.
Thanks.
It's going to go from one neurotic Jew to the other. I'm reading Fleischman Is in Trouble, and then I'll get to yours.
Well, Portnoy's next.
Portnoy's the plan. I know. Okay. Portnoy would be complaining.
Goodbye, Columbus. That's from a Michigan fan. I like that one.
So, seriously, this is so great. I can't believe it's taken us this long to really sit down and for real have a great sports chat, and thanks for being so honest and open. And again, I hope people will check out the No Sports Report.
Yeah.
How can people follow you on social?
It's just my name. It's just Jensen Karp, JensenKarp. And my wife and I have been doing this very weird thing since the beginning of quarantine where we give away items from our house.
Nice.
Prizes for trivia on Instagram Live. It's on her Instagram Live Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 7 p.m. Pacific on her Instagram, which is at Danielle Fishel. We've given away like a crock pot. We've given away a $66 Red Robin gift card we used once.
Amazing.
We're running out of prizes. We had John Mayer come by, give out a magazine. We've had guests behind us 6 feet behind glass. It's very fun. So we do that as well.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. Special voicemail you guys do not want to miss. This is View from the Cheap Seats. Stay with us.
Moscow, 1972.
Hey, guys, welcome back to the show. Jensen Karp, unbelievable. Want to remind you that we have a YouTube page. It's called Scarborough Country. Go check it out. It's a great way to watch old episodes of Cheap Seats. We have commentary coming out that we're going to be adding to those episodes. We also have commentary on a great web series we did called Held Up, plus stand-up clips and us on other shows. Scarborough Country, it's on YouTube. Join it. And before we get out of here, we got a voicemail from Christoph Waltz, as promised. Here it is.
Randy and Jason, it's Christoph Waltz. I'm calling you because I have a pitch and I wanted to run it by you. I've been, of course, enjoying the Last Dance documentary series during this COVID-19 outbreak. We've all been quarantined, and it was exactly the medicine that I think we all needed. But what I was thinking is, and hear me out, why not a new documentary series that is basketball focused about my favorite player, the unicorn, Kristaps Porzingis? It would follow his early beginnings in Latvia all the way to the United States, where he became a phenom. a hybrid player that's made for the new millennium, a 7-footer with handles who can see the court, pass the rock, finish at the basket with authority. His days in the New York Knicks organization, where he had to deal with the bright glare of being the topic of conversation in Madison Square Garden, and the Port Authority having Phil Jackson draft him, trying to figure out how to assimilate into New York, and then all the way into his time in Dallas, we would interview Mark Cuban and also the likes of J.J. Barea. There's obviously some off-the-court drama to follow as well, much as we saw with Michael Jordan and what he was dealing with the death of his father. We would delve ever so delicately into the rape charges against the unicorn. Hit me back. Let me know what you're thinking. I think the tentative title to this would be The Last Waltz. Now, I know what you're going to say, but Christoph, that is using your name. It does not say Porzingis or the unicorn anywhere in there. Furthermore, there was a famous documentary made by the great Peter Bogdanovich about the band. I've taken it all into consideration, and I still feel strongly that the name should be The Last Waltz. Hit me back.
I don't know. I don't
There's
think
no
that's
way
a,
you can get 10
maybe
episodes
that's a
10
part episode thing on Quibi.
10
if
shorts,
10
maybe.
Minute episodes, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
That's the only thing about Porzingis that is short would be this documentary.
Yes, that's true.
All right, there you go. Thanks to everybody. I want to thank Jensen Karp. Thank you to our friend Brad Morris. Follow both Brad Morris 773. Follow at Jensen Karp. So funny. Get his book, all that stuff. We'll be back next week. Looking to try and schedule the author of Fleischman is in Trouble. She wrote for ESPN the magazine. Taffy's so good. I'm really excited to get her on the show, and we'll talk sports with her. But have a great week. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.
A podcast network.